AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. And by Simplot Grower Solutions, we're in your fields and by your side. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com. Another round of long liquidation in the soybean oil market was too much for beans to handle. Beans were lower even with meal, corn, and winter wheat closing on the plus side of unchanged. Cattle were higher. And you know what, guys? Hogs pulled off something that I figured would be nearly impossible.
Live from this week's grande finale via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Clark Neighbors of BIS Commodities. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. You know, yesterday, I was putting out the warning on this hog market because it had gone like straight up. It feels like it's a parabolic market now. And so often, a bull market will end on bull news, on bullish news. We got that quarterly hogs and pigs report out yesterday afternoon. The major categories, the inventories all came in under the lowest pre-report trade guess. And I just figured, you know what? That's probably the right dose of bullish news to put a top in this hog market. And it did it. It closed higher. Not only did it close higher, it closed with solid gains. It wasn't limit up. I mean, if this market would have been downtrending, if it would have been downtrending this week and we would have seen a round of long liquidation ahead of that quarterly hogs and pigs report, then we would have been limit up today. I just don't think there's any question about it. But the ability of that market to hold on, it stumbled coming out of the gates, gapped higher, fell back, and then ran up to close higher.
I don't know if parabolic is the right word for this move in the lean hogs. I would say the more correct term would be porkabolic, perhaps. That's how I would characterize it.
Pegabolic?
Pegabolic.
Yep. Yeah.
Parahogic, perhaps even.
The only thing that gives me some pause in the hog market right now is it did basically open near or at the session high and came back, and we had a mid-range close. Solidly higher, but a mid-range close. Okay. That might give some a bit of an excuse to go ahead and take some profits when we get started again next week. But boy, this thing, it's at the top. It looks like it's climbing to the top of the mountain right now. It's pretty impressive. Very impressive.
Yes.
Yeah. Welcome. Glad everybody's here. We've got a great show coming your way. Clark Neighbors, BIS Commodities. We often focus with Clark on the cash markets. I'm not that driven to do that with Clark today. I think I'm more interested in getting his perspective on what we should expect from the markets leading up to and even after those reports that we get from USDA next week.
That's coming up next week already.
Yeah. Wednesday. It's here. March 31. Okay, buddy, let's get to it. What you got for closes?
Chip, wheat futures opened lower, pushed down to test support at yesterday's lows, then recovered to close with slight gains. Much of the pressure on wheat prices this week was tied to this week's rains in hard red winter wheat country. Soil moisture levels are much improved, lowering the odds that sketchy wheat stands will be torn up and replanted to an alternative crop. The month-long downtrend in new crop winter wheat futures is expected to persist ahead of next week's grain stocks and planting intentions estimates. Uncertainty over spring wheat acres should limit selling pressure in that market. July hard red winter wheat was a penny and a half higher, 574 and one half. July soft red firmed 0.75 cents to 6.09¼. September spring wheat, 4¼ cents lower, 6.30 even, Chip.
I was disappointed with the performance in that spring wheat market today. I kind of figured if you're going to see corn trade to the upside, and maybe it's because beans were selling off, including on the new crop. That could be why spring wheat, new crop spring wheat futures weren't willing to follow the winter wheat to the upside. On the week, July SRW down a dime. The July HRW down 16¾, and the September spring wheat futures down 12¼.
Corn export bookings now stand very close to USDA's estimate for sales for the entire marketing year, and the strong demand base brought boll spreaders back in to the corn market today. Traders will monitor shipping activity, but it is expected that some of this year's sales will eventually be rolled to the next marketing year. If not, any additional sales will only tighten supplies. Anticipation of next week's reports from USDA is expected to limit price movement at the start of next week. December corn futures opened slightly lower, slipped to new low for the month, and recovered to post a high range close. May corn futures 6 cents higher, 5.52½. July corn gained 3¼ cents, 5.35¾. December corn closed at 4.74¾, up a brave 1¼ cents, Chip.
All right. You know, that talk that some export sales are eventually going to be rolled to the next marketing year, it's very, very early to be having that conversation, but it's out there. Mike Mock mentioned it yesterday. I made a couple of phone calls and sent a couple of emails this morning, you know, just saying, hey, how much is this being talked about? And it's a fairly widespread expectation out there right now. On the week, May corn off 5¼, and D's corn was down a nickel.
Well, March 1 bean stocks will be the focus of the bean market next week, and producers' intentions to increase bean acres from a year ago are a very close second on the priority list. Traders know bean acres will increase from a year ago, but by how much is the question to be answered next week. Traders are also monitoring soybean shipments to China as tension between the U.S. and China intensify. November beans opened slightly lower and tried to climb back on top of the pivotal 12.20 level, but late-day selling forced a low session close. Excuse me, a session low close.
Yeah.
May bean futures 13¾ cents lower at $14.5. July beans fell 13¼, 13.91¼. November bean futures 12.07¼ on the close, down 7½ cents. $14.5 in the May.
Yeah,
I hate that.
And the July under 13 bucks or under 14 bucks, I think that probably added to the selling interest in that market today, made it difficult for it to recover. On the week, May soybeans down 15¾, November soybeans down 12¾ cents.
May cotton 194 points higher, 80.38. December cotton jumped 219 points to 78.74 on the livestock side.
Hold on.
No?
Are you ready for it? On the week, May cotton down 430 points.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a big
week. Not nearly as much fun.
No.
All right, on the livestock side, solid beef demand ratcheted up packers' demand for cattle, pushing cash cattle bids to the 115.50 level. Wait a second, that's supposed to say 114, isn't it?
No, 115.50. After 7 consecutive weeks.
It provided incentive for futures to maintain an impressive premium. April live cattle 55 cents higher, 120.10. June cattle up 70 cents, 121.77½. April feeders 90 cents higher, 145.12½. Snout side, even with a straight up rally in lean hog futures ahead of the hogs and pigs report, the report was bullish enough to keep traders on the buy side of the market. April lean hogs 112.5 higher, 180. June hogs 227.5 higher, 105.60.
Very good. And on the week, April live cattle up $1.70, April feeder cattle up $5.70, and the big percentage winner on the week, April lean hogs up $6.55. That's a 6.95% advance. Clark Neighbors up next. When making corn herbicide applications, some growers choose to only apply partial rates rather than applying the full rate indicated on the label. Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is here to tell us what the harm is in using that approach.
Yeah, this is really important. While applying partial rates may seem like a good way to cut costs, the truth is that it can significantly damage your ROI in the long run. This is because you're applying lower doses of herbicides that allow plants to withstand the application and survive, which can kickstart the process for tolerance and eventual resistance with these weed biotypes. The worst thing with this is that resistance typically goes unnoticed until at least 30% of weeds in the field are resistant, so it can persist and spread.
That's got to have an impact on corn growth, which eventually has an impact on yield, right?
Yeah, in addition to eventual resistance, cutting your corn herbicide rate can lead to more weed outbreaks, crop competition with weeds for nutrients like water and nitrogen, and ultimately decreased yield. Using full herbicide rates will not only be more effective in removing problem weeds, but it's also going to prevent weeds from developing new forms of resistance to that herbicide.
Okay, so which corn herbicide will give growers the best pre- and post-emergent coverage?
Yeah, Acuron corn herbicide has unmatched weed control. Better weed control equals higher yield potential. When used in a pre-emergent application at full label rates, Acuron lets you discover the extra bushels no other herbicide can, 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other corn herbicide.
Excellent, Steve. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre worth Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Dallaro Complete. Keep your operation moving forward with Dallaro Complete from Bayer.
Okay, welcome back. I'm Chip, got Davis with me.
Hello.
You know, there's one thing that I forgot to mention earlier, and I should have mentioned it right away. I was... Over the noon hour, I walked outside for a little bit, and it was I saw the strangest thing.
Really?
There was like this dark spot following me around.
Really?
Out in the yard. Yeah. It was the strangest thing. I haven't seen it for so long. It was really kind of scary.
Was it sort of shaped like you?
Yeah. Very, very similar. Yeah, that's almost weird. Like an outline.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. It moved. Every time I moved, it moved. It followed, like I said, it followed me everywhere.
Uh-huh.
It's like its footprints were where my footprints were.
That's
crazy.
Spooky, dude. That's spooky. Weird stuff.
And it felt
I'm going to go test it right now and see if it's here now. I've got a feeling it's not.
Right. Yeah. It we had about 15 minutes of very nice sunshine.
Well, I'm glad you caught the window then. Yeah.
Right.
Good timing, bro.
Yeah. Yep. Well, when I saw it shining, I was like, I'm out there. We'll see you guys in a bit. So, okay. Let's get to a conversation with Clark Neighbors, BIS Commodities. Clark, it is great to have you back on the show. How are you?
Good afternoon, Chip. So was that dark shadow, did it kind of have like a chiseled look to it?
No.
It
had the look of a very disappointed. It had the look of a very disappointed Cyclone fan is what it had, Clark.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Jeez, did you watch the girls the other night?
I did.
Oh, unbelievable. So disappointing. Mm-hmm. So frustrating. Anyway.
Crazy ending, yeah. Well, we're used to the Cyclone fans, right?
Yeah, we're starting to I hate to admit it, but yeah. But yeah.
Starting to sound like Hawkeye fans is what I would finish that statement as.
No. Never. Yep. That 15 minutes of sunshine that we had over the noon hour, Clark, got me thinking about baseball too. Yeah, man.
That'd be good. Yeah, it's right around the corner. Golf season, et cetera. So.
Yep. Do you have a son that's playing some golf someplace?
Yeah, he's down by St. Louis at Southern Illinois Edwardsville.
Really? Good for him.
Yes. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Back when watched him play in Southern Missouri early this week. And by the way, Missouri is very wet, if you care to know. So,
yeah, it's all the way down into Arkansas, that moisture carries. There's no question about that. You heard my comments about the hog market, Clark. I just want to get your take on it there. I know you follow what's going on in this livestock trade, but this is one impressive move, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I think the two ag commodities that have been, I don't know, parabolic's the right word, whatever you want to call, making new contract ties, et cetera, is the hogs and the bean oil. Yep. And, you know, you made a good summation of yesterday's report. I think there was a lot of anticipation of potentially a limit move today and or, you know, is a lot of this built into the market. The demand of hogs has been good. The export trade has been excellent from a year-to-year standpoint or historical standpoint. And, you know, none of us know the solid situation of the ASF scenario in China. That continues to, I think, at least support the hog market at this point. So it'll be interesting, I guess, going forward.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Does cash continue to run? Does the cut, you know, and it's on a good run, and I agree with you. It seems like it needs some sort of a correction. We haven't really seen a correction in 6 months other than a couple bucks here and there on real short little swings. So it's impressive. It's impressive.
It
between it and
is.
Bean oil, I don't know which one is the most impressive, but they both have been.
Yes. Yep. Yep. A little bit of a dent in the bean oil's armor here today or the last couple of days, though. You still can't say that that move to the is over, though, can you?
Well, the major story is still there as far as, you know, the green energy policy, the Asian veg oil market. I mean, that storyline's still there and it's going to continue to be there. I think what's putting a dent in the market here the last couple of days or this week, I can't confirm this, but supposedly there's rumors floating around about South American soy oil coming into the U.S., more specifically California. Now, I believe there is an import duty on any of that. So between that and soaring ocean freight rates, we'll see if that happens. But I think that was the reason you saw some pressure in the beans, more specifically led by the bean oil market. And, you know, all these oil markets are crazy, Chip. One quick note, corn oil is like liquid gold anymore to these ethanol plants. And on its own merits, adding like 10 cents to the margin, having some plants even talking about, do you extract more corn oil? If in doing so, it takes away from the quality of your DDG product, to the point where their spec, I don't know what the exact specs are, but for exports, it may drop the DDGs below export specs, so you may not be able to export those DDGs if you extract additional oil. But I think there's plants looking at that, and the nice thing from an ethanol standpoint, not to digress into that, but it's helping margins, hopefully helping production going forward in that regard after a tough year, or especially the last 2-3 months.
Yeah, absolutely. Clark, well, let's stay on ethanol here for just a second, because this is something that I wanted to get your take on as well. A year ago, well, when we get our production numbers on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, for the first time in a year, they're going to be above the year ago level. Can it have a psychological impact on how we're looking at this ethanol market and the ethanol trade?
I think it already is to some degree. You're hearing hints and thoughts of additional plants coming back online, one specific one being here in town, another one in Columbus, Nebraska. The bid structure would point that out, possibly. So I think that's a function of better margins. It's a function of, you know, the economy opening up, better driving demand, pent-up demand in the summer, whatever it may be. But I think that's helping fill that gap. You know, you looked at last week's numbers. We had a little regression on production from the previous week. But, you know, whether we get back to levels we saw 12, 24 months ago, that may take some time, if ever. But I think we're getting back to those levels from a production standpoint, a lot better today than we thought we would have even a month or two ago. So, yeah, I think there's a, you know, and keep in mind in those reports next week, I mean, the two things we can count on corn is the ethanol production, which I've seen estimates for the quarter of like 1.3 million metric ton is obviously down from the previous year. But or a billion bushels, excuse me, down from the previous year, as we all know, like 12%. But and then obviously the export commitments are rock solid. But you know, at an export pace on corn for the second quarter, and we're just really ramping up the export export pace right now, as far as corn's concerned, as we wind down the bean export program.
You know, and we had the last 4 weeks of the quarter leading up to March 1 were awfully good on the shipments. So
yeah.
I mean, I want to talk more about this grain stocks report when we come back for the next segment, Clark. But you're setting the stage for it, and basically, the average trade guess from Reuters, I think, is like 1.7. Shoot, I don't have it right in front of me. It's
on the corn you're talking.
Yeah.
So the stock's estimate is 7.76, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. 7.76
like
billion bushels.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
The question there is, were the shipments strong enough to give us a number that's going below that average trade guess? And we'll dig into that. And the other thing that I want to get is the sensitivity of that March 1 soybean stocks number, Clark. How much movement do we need from that 1.54 level to get a big reaction in the market? Boy, feels like it's going to be a really sensitive report day for us on Wednesday. Clark Neighbors, right here on AgriTalk.
American-based and family-run, Simplot Grower Solutions knows what it takes to keep a farm and your way of life productive and thriving. It takes field-proven insights backed by trusted technologies and products that help you get the most out of every acre. It takes a local ag expert you can grow with, a down-to-earth partner focused on your success. Head to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com and take the next step with us. Simplot Grower Solutions, in your fields, by your side.
It's time for Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Efforts to free the Ever Given from the Suez Canal is growing more urgent as the backlog grows. We'll check in with Clark on that issue here in just a little bit. The International Grains Council says rising consumption will absorb much of the production rise for grains and soybeans. French Farm Office leaves high wheat crop ratings unchanged. France's Farm Office once again rated 87% of its soft wheat crop good to excellent. That's a good one. China rules imports of Australian wine will be subject to an anti-dumping duty for 5 years. China and Australia back at it again. Study shows Pfizer and Moderna vaccines safe and effective for pregnant women. And FSA goes from maximum 25% to 50% for staffing at local offices.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Life is a gamble, a game we all play. But you need to say,
Davis, you're a country music fan. I mean, you don't hate country music, right?
I'm not opposed to country music.
I don't know if there's a better band than that band right there, that Ace and the Hole band.
Woo. Oh, yeah. They'll swing.
That's
country and Western music out of those cats.
They play them both. That's
they
right.
They do, both kinds.
All right. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We're having a conversation with Clark Neighbors from BIS Commodities. First, though, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Sure thing. July, hard red winter wheat, 1 penny and a half higher, 574.5. September, spring wheat, 4.25 cents lower, 6.30 even. May corn futures, 6 cents higher, 552.5. December corn closed at 4.74¾. That's up 1.25 cents today. May soybean futures, 13¾ cents lower, $14.5. November bean futures closed at 12.07¼, down 7.5 cents. Look out, May cotton, 194 points higher, 80.38. June cattle climbed 70 cents, 121.77½. April feeder cattle, 90 cents higher, 145.12½. And April lean hogs, as part of a porkabolic move, $1.12½ higher, crossing over the threshold to 180 cents. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Clark Neighbors, BIS Commodities. Clark, I'm sitting here looking at the price screen. The bull spreads worked big time in the corn today, and the bear spreads worked big time in the beans. Is that just money flow ahead of the reports next week, or are we supposed to be taking some hidden message from that?
Primarily money flow, Chip. I think the beans were more reflective on, you know, just the pressure from the soybean oil.
Right.
The only thing I guess I would nitpick on that a little bit is we're winding down the bean export program. Generally, bean basis has been pretty flat the last 30 plus days. I mean, it's still strong, but we're on the other side of the coin. You're really ramping up the corn export program. The need to cover some of those needs. So from a fundamental standpoint, if I had to nitpick, that's probably what I would throw in as far as why the corn spreads were strong and the beans a little weak.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And, you know, when you look in the report, you know, I think one thing to keep in mind in those spreads or what we're talking about to some degree too is, you know, a lot of focus will be on the planted acres. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's more of a long-term story that's, you know, in the works, if you will.
Yep.
The stocks numbers, I think, have more importance in the report based on this very short-term impact, and that gives us a better feel where we are with our stocks, and that could have more impact on the spreads going forward, you know, over the next 60 days or so.
Right. You know, and looking back over the last 20 years and how – the March 1 stocks line up with pre-report trade expectations, it's basically a flip of the coin, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And especially corn is harder because, as I kind of mentioned earlier, you know, the two things we can measure, exports and the
crush,
the grind for ethanol, et cetera. And just to clarify, I mean, the grind for corn ethanol, I think, was $1.2 billion. For the last quarter, I think I said it was 1.3. Exports for corn for 665 for the quarter. So we know those two numbers. The feed and residual debate, and, you know, you throw in, you know, two or three factors there. You saw the hog and pig report yesterday. Well, as there's many hogs to feed, poultry numbers are slightly down, cattle's a little bigger. We talked about the ethanol situation being down with production, but that means you got less DDG, so you're feeding more corn to offset that, and then you throw in the wheat corn spread, and, you know, as you're seeing wheat going to some of the rations out west, so you throw that all in a mix, it's kind of a convoluted mess in some degree.
Yeah.
But, you know, the market's going to react more or less off what those trade estimates are that we talked about earlier.
Right.
And, you know, the corn estimate is not significantly lower than a year ago. But again, we're just getting into this major export play.
Right.
And one note on that, you know, we got 1.3 billion bushels of corn to ship that's on the books right now at 80 million a week, which is humping along really well.
Yeah.
That's 16 weeks. That goes till the middle of July at that kind of pace.
Man. So we got to do 2 million ton a week is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, we've performed really well on the beans. I heard you talking earlier about how there's talk of some of that might be spilling over in the new crop, and it may very well do that. But, boy, we've performed excellent on the beans. I think there's only like 230 million bushel of beans left to ship. And we're basically at the USDA estimate on both corn and bean exports. So the assumption of the market is those numbers at some point have to inch up some. So, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch Wednesday. And you were mentioned earlier about soybean number.
Right,
so
the vulnerability.
That is, the average trade guess is 154.
Right.
Beans are a little easier to measure because you don't have the feed issue involved. We did about 890 million bushels of exports for the second quarter. Think about that.
Man.
That's more demand than we had totally on beans 10 years ago, counting export and crush. And I think for the quarter, the usage is something north of 1.4 when you throw in what's been a record crush. I don't know what the magic number is, and we're pretty delicate from a pipeline standpoint on that carryout number. But if you see a bean stocks number that's low 1.5s or sub 1.5, that could, again, and if you see something like that, that probably causes a reaction to the long side of the front end of the market and have some impact on the spreads, at least initially, I would guess.
But if we would get, okay, I'm gonna throw the two reports together. Let's say we get the 90 million on bean planting intentions, but we get a lower than expected March 1 stocks number. Doesn't that help? I mean, wouldn't that put more pressure to bring a few more acres on and help support that new crop too?
Oh yeah, I mean, rising tide helps all boats.
Yep.
I still think the front end would, you know, the money flow would still be in the front end. You know, the new funds expansion is something to still keep in the back of our mind. But
that's right.
it definitely would. There's no doubt you need something 90 million or north on beans, or, you know, we're having the same conversation 12 months from now, if not more so.
Right.
But again, you know, that planted acreage numbers in the works. So that takes a while to all play itself out.
Right. The pro farmer estimate, or I should say survey results, the pro farmer survey results, the farm futures survey results, both had bean plantings under 89 million. I mean, if we get an 88 handle on bean plantings, Clark, we'd have to see some kind of a reaction, wouldn't we?
Oh, absolutely. I think even under 90 would to some degree.
Okay.
I mean, that's just not going to work. You know, I mean, we don't know how demand's going to play out the next 12 months, right? But it puts us behind an eight ball. That's, you know, the critical nature of the crop this summer then is that much more amped up if that's the real number. So,
Right. So, okay, go over to corn. What if we get a 93-something on corn planting? Does that make that market a little more comfortable going forward?
Probably for a while. I mean, it may stall the new crop to some degree, which, you know, the corn market's kind of been in a stalling pattern the last 60 days looking for new news anyway. I would assume it would for a bit. I mean, you still got to grow a crop. We still got to get through the growing season, play the weather game, et cetera. But I think that would be more of a situation where, as a producer, you know, maybe look at being a little more aggressive on getting some new crop locked in corn. But I think if you have a 93-something on corn, chances are your bean number's a little smaller than 90 of some nature.
Yeah.
So it's plenty early to draw some additional acres, especially maybe in the northern plains. You know, that's probably where the biggest factor could play out as far as switching of acres if that needs to happen.
Gotcha. Hey, I want to move on, get away from that for a little bit. This crude oil market back over $60, Clark. What kind of impact might that have on the grains?
A lot of times crude's the tail wagging the dog in the commodity world. In the inflation world, it's captured a lot of interest here of late. and I think that's something to bear in mind. It helps, you know, presumably helps ethanol. I think it's a statement on our economy, potentially the world economy to some degree. So I think that's showing a lot of stability. Now, some of that, I think, of this week is stemming from the situation in the Suez Canal.
Yep.
And there's some things here to watch. I mean, you read here today or midday today, there's a lot of concerns now. This situation may last a few weeks.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, we've been in a 12-month disruption of the global supply chain the way it is. You throw something like this in, I believe like 12% of the global trade goes through that part of the world or through that canal. 5% of the oil. But here's an interesting thing. There's 10,000 40-foot containers on that boat. It takes 85 miles of railroad cars to unload that boat.
85 miles.
The only thing on ag you got to keep in mind in that, too, is Black Sea feed grains, Russian wheat, going to Asia can't get through.
Right.
So do they need to look at other alternatives, U.S., okay. Europe, and also...
Yep, Clark.
Ocean freight's going up a bunch.
We got to hop. Thanks, Clark.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Question for you, Chip.
I would love to try to answer it.
Okay. So the Suez Canal is clogged.
Yeah.
Clark was just talking
85
about...
85 miles of train.
85 miles of train to offload what's on that boat. I'm not sure what to call that vessel. That vessel. We'll go with that.
Okay.
Clark mentioned that most of, as far as grains, etc., it's Black Sea stuff. It's European-sourced stuff. Stuff from near there.
Right.
The market doesn't seem like hugely concerned with this. If it were the Panama Canal, would we be looking at a different scenario?
Yeah, I think
From the U.S. perspective, anyway?
Absolutely. Our basis, our Gulf basis would just go, bleh.
Don't you think?
Oh, no question. Mm-hmm. No question whatsoever. I mean, when we started running into problems on the Mississippi, and you couldn't use the Mississippi,
right?
Basis, bleh.
Yep.
So, there would be no question. But that's great perspective there. We keep looking for the delays in the ship in the movement of supplies of soybeans to the Brazilian ports. To maybe generate a little extra demand for U.S. beans, maybe what we ought to be looking for is that clogged Suez Canal to bring a little extra wheat demand to either the U.S. or to Canada.
Well, I wondered that too. That's kind of part of it. How long does an importer wait for this situation to correct itself, to shake itself loose before they're like, you know what? I gotta have this wheat.
You know, it's like we were talking.
Let's call the U.S.
The thing is, this is, even if it takes weeks, you know, quote unquote weeks, to get that boat out of there, as I understand, it might, and it's got something to do with the tides. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're talking about the highest of the high tides is going to be needed to give them the best shot at moving that boat out of the way. Even if it takes weeks, the disruption won't last that long. Because at some point, Davis, it's like we were talking about this morning, at some point you got to make the decision, okay, let's go around.
Right.
And I'm not talking about going around the boat. There's no room to do that. I'm talking about go around Africa.
Yes. Yep. And we saw some companies, Maersk, I think, was on that list, that are already talking about, you know what, let's just go ahead and divert for now.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. And the thing is, I think the biggest impact on this, maybe it's the obvious thing, Clark said it, shipping costs, freight costs.
Yeah. Right.
And right. I don't know if that's a worldwide thing. I'm feeling like it probably is.
Right. Yeah, the same it adds 11 or 12 days getting to get around Africa. So it's not an easy decision. It's to get to the European market. I mean, it's another 3,500 miles or something like that. It's a crazy number. It's a crazy number. Yep. So, it's not an easy decision to make until you realize if we don't make the decision now, then we're going to be stuck here for a long time.
Well, what do they do if the high tide doesn't go high enough? Is the other thing.
You go
they
around.
Keep pointing to this high tide. Well, you know, yeah. We'll get it. Well,
yeah, you go around. That's it. So, okay. I have mentioned a couple of times that the March 1 stocks of corn and soybeans, how they line up with pre-report trade expectations. I've mentioned a couple of times that it's basically a coin flip when you look at the last 20 years. So, why do I say that? This analysis is from Jeff Wilson at Pro Farmer. In the past 20 years, March industry estimates were too high. This is on corn, were too high 11 times by an average of 90 million bushels and too low 8 years by an average of 158 million bushels. So a couple of times they got it right.
Yeah.
Or no, okay. Once. Once in the last 20
the
years.
The
yeah, they got
time.
It right. They got it right. So
who put that together?
Jeff Wilson.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On soybeans, traders have estimated March 1 soybean stocks above USDA 10 times in the past 20 years by an average of 21 million bushels. 9 times the trade was too low. The average miss was 43 million bushels. So it's about as much of a coin flip going into this as any report that's out there when it comes to how the USDA number actually lines up with the trade expectations. And of course, the grain stocks has another element of uncertainty with it now because of those revisions that USDA has had to roll out to the previous grain stocks reports. Mm-hmm. That just makes it that much more difficult to get it right.
And you know, this week's Pro Farmer newsletter had the comment in it. Well, somebody's going to be surprised.
Yeah,
I haven't heard that in a while.
Yeah, well, it's because of the range on the grain stocks for corn.
Right.
It's like 400 million bushels.
Yeah, surprising
so,
in itself.
There's a big window of opportunity for somebody to be surprised. That's exactly right. National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day for April 1 through the 5th. We've got above normal temperatures expected over most of the Corn Belt. The rest is looking at normal to below normal. That's over in the eastern Corn Belt. We've got below normal precipitation expected over most of the U.S. April 1 through 5, 8 to 14 day. This is April 3rd through the 9th. Above normal temperatures expected over the entire Corn Belt. We've got above normal precip expected up in the Dakotas, normal to below normal, with the below normal in the Eastern Belt expected across the rest of the Corn Belt. Wow. For Davis and for producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, have a great weekend. Monday morning, Machinery Pete. Monday afternoon, Craig Turner from Daniel's Trading. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.